Coming up on Tech News Today, T-Mobile simplifies stuff. BlackBerry teases a new phone, but is it a good time for that? And Evernote cozies up to the Germans. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, March 26, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow, send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter TNT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, Samsung Galaxy, and other smartphones are worth at Gazelle.com.
And by Hulu Plus. Watch as many TV shows as you want, anytime, anywhere, on your devices, all streamed instantly to you. Visit HuluPlus.com/twit to start your free 2-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/twit.
Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show we keep you up to date with the most important stories in the tech world. Put them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. T-Mobile announced today that its fast LTE service is now live in Baltimore, Maryland, Kansas City, Kansas, Houston, Texas, Las Vegas, Nevada, Phoenix, Arizona, San Jose, California, and Washington, D.C. They hope to cover 90% of the top 25 U.S. markets by the end of the year. The company also announced the HTC One, BlackBerry Z10, and iPhone 5 are all coming to the network for $99 down. That down is part of their new plans that don't require a contract that were also confirmed. The Samsung Galaxy S4 will arrive on T-Mobile May 1st.
China's official newspaper, People's Daily, has criticized Apple for what it called empty and self-praising response to an earlier report by China's national television broadcaster CCTV, which alleged that Apple treats Chinese consumers differently than customers in other countries with poor warranty policies. Over the weekend, Apple had posted a message on its Chinese website that said it provides a 90-day warranty on repairs, same as in the U.S., and longer than the 30 days mandated by law in China.
Today, Facebook's officially launching threaded replies on Facebook pages. Page admins can opt into the feature right now. Starting on July 10th, the replies feature will be on by default. The most active comments will flow to the top, and the threads will be reordered for each viewer depending on their connections.
The Language Council of Sweden doesn't get a lot of airtime on this show, but they do today because they've dropped the word Ugooglebar from its list of official new Swedish words, and apologize for the Swedish pronunciation there. Term translated to ungoogleable in English and means something that you can't find on the web with the use of a search engine. Google complained about the generalization of its brand in that definition, and the council decided it just wasn't worth wasting its time dealing with the complaint.
The Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, or ICANN, is launching a new trademark clearinghouse today as a way for trademark owners to protect intellectual property as the organization makes way for hundreds of new generic top-level domains. So, trademark owners can register their marks before a new TLD is launched and protect their trademarks if other companies try to register a website using those trademarks. It isn't free, though. The annual fee ranges between $95 and $150.
The analysts agree that Apple will report its income this quarter was lower than last year at the same time. This would be the first time Apple would report such news since 2003. While revenues are projected to be a record high, it's Apple's declining gross margins on products like the iPad and Macs that is causing income to be lower.
The Economic Times of India reports Apple plans to triple its exclusive stores there to around 200 by 2015. Three anonymous franchisees have been asked to scale up operations. Apple also plans to expand its presence in multi-brand stores. Samsung has dominated smartphone sales in India, but last November, Apple began selling phones directly to consumers instead of exclusively through mobile carriers.
Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian is calling out his fellow geeks in a new blog post for the crude responses and death threats and DDoS attacks following the Adria Richards debacle. If you're not familiar with that, it involved her calling out two men for inappropriate behavior at a conference. That's a very simplified version of the story. Ohanian says free speech must be used responsibly, and that while the open nature of the internet allowed those contrary voices to stand out, he says, quote, "I don't believe it represents the majority of us."
Microsoft has started updating its Windows 8 Mail, Calendar, and People apps. The updates are available in the Windows Store. Mail update includes flagging, junk mail, and folder support. And Calendar gets a new weekly view and an inline time view, but loses integration with Google Calendar.
Google is now offering the Nick Collection, which is a bundle of six plugins for Aperture, Lightroom, and Photoshop for $150. The plugins were originally created by Nick Software, a company that Google acquired. Nick Software also made Snapseed. The plugins include a variety of tools that let you work with HDR, color correction, and reduce noise. Google's offering a free 15-day trial if you can get it now.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by ShareFile from Citrix. Most business emails include some sort of attachment these days, a document, spreadsheet, PowerPoints, contracts especially, and you need that information to be received. You want to make sure they get it. You also want to make sure the right person got it. And then especially in the case of contracts, you want to make sure they're confidential. But that doesn't always happen if you're just using good old-fashioned email. That's why ShareFile is important to every business. ShareFile by Citrix sends your attachments as secure links. You can send files of almost any size with the highest degree of security and receive notifications when your files have been opened and know who opened them. ShareFile is easy to use and integrates into any business. Plus, with ShareFile, you can access files from anywhere, your laptop, your tablet, your smartphone. We use ShareFile at Twit. I use ShareFile. It's great at tax time for sending all those sensitive documents that you don't want to just be out on the open internet. If you're not using ShareFile yet, you need to sign up for our free trial right now. No credit card required, nothing to lose. You'll see why millions of professionals rely on it every day. Get started today with our special 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter TNT. That's ShareFile.com. Type in TNT, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right, we got a couple of guests joining us today. Will Harris of ChannelFlip.com calling in from across the waters. Good morning or good evening in your case, Will.
Good evening. Yes, it's early evening. It's almost beer o'clock here in London town.
Lovely. Do you have a beer, or are you going to have to wait till the end of the show?
I'm going to have to wait till the end of the show, Tom. I believe in TNTing responsibly.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll hurry up for you.
Thanks.
Also joining us today, he was just in the studio getting ready for Mac Break Weekly, which comes on right after us. And we're like, hey, want to join in? Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. How's it going, Renee?
Oh, it's going great. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for being willing to just kind of plop in and join us. Great to have you.
I'm at your service, sir.
Excellent. Do you have a beer?
No, I have coffee, though, which is just as good at this point in day.
That's true.
It's a little early in the morning here. Let's start with that T-Mobile announcement. John Laguerre, the CEO of T-Mobile USA, wearing his trademark pink shoelaces, pink T-Mobile T-shirt, got on stage in Manhattan in a gallery, art gallery, that was described by, I believe it was either Terrence O'Brien or Darren Murph at Engadget, as looking like something from the set of Saw. And he ranted and raved about carrier plans. He was cursing up a storm, but basically confirmed everything we had heard, everything we'd saw on the T-Mobile side about the new contract-free carrier plans. What they also announced was LTE in the seven markets I mentioned in the news fuse. They expect to hit 90% of the top 25 markets. They want to cover 200 million people by the end of the year. They're going to get all those great phones for $99. $99 down. You still have to pay $20 a month over the course of 24 months. For the HTC One, the Z10, and the iPhone 5. iPhone 5 will work on the 1900 megahertz spectrum, the advanced wireless spectrum, and on LTE. And they did a lot of clarification in the Q&A session about what happens with these contract-free plans if you bring an unlocked device, if you want an unlocked device, if you leave before your 24 months is up on the install plan. Here's the deal. It's $50 for a line. $10 additional if you want to get 2 gigabytes on the fast. You get unlimited on 2G, but if you want 4G, you got to pay $10 for 2 gigabytes, or you can pay an extra $20, so $70 total for unlimited on 4G, although tethering is limited to 2.5 gigabytes on the unlimited plans. Not quite as simple as T-Mobile wants you to think it is. If you leave T-Mobile before paying off the phone, you owe the balance of what you would have paid for that phone at first. But they will do something where they take the phone back and give you credit, what they call fair market credit, for the cost of that phone. And you only owe what's left after they apply that credit. The phones are not unlocked if you're paying them off. If you buy them at the beginning of the contract, they are unlocked. But they remain locked until you pay them off or trade them in. Now, Renee, I don't know what carrier you use, but does this sound like something appealing? Would you move to T-Mobile?
I like that. I've always bought off contract and I've always bought unlocked whenever I could just because I didn't like the idea of the contract model. Unfortunately, the phones are usually really expensive, so you have to be willing to do that just for your freedom. But I think T-Mobile is last amongst the major carriers. It's a bold move. It's something that's not usual in the North American markets. And I hope it's successful because I'd like to see a lot more of that.
Will, coming from the UK, I mean, you guys have a whole different plan structure and contract structure over there. What does this sound like to you?
Pretty darn complicated. I mean, seriously, it's like, so you put a down payment on the phone and then you pay it off over the month, but you're not restricted. Like, you can leave the contract, but then you have to pay it off. So it's still basically a contract for the phone. It just seems like, I appreciate T-Mobile is kind of last to the party, and so they're trying to do something a bit different. This seems kind of overly complicated. We have a pretty simple model here in the UK where you basically get pretty much any phone you want for nothing, and then you pay a contract over 2 years, and you can't leave within the 2 years. And everybody seems pretty happy with that. You know, you can get an iPhone 5 for no money if you pay 30 quid a month. And that just seems like a pretty simple proposition. So nobody's really doing anything different, but I appreciate that. We're also in a bit of a different position here because there's only one carrier in the UK that has LTE right now. So that does make things a bit different.
You know what this sounds a lot like? It sounds a lot like the car lease agreement that I recently signed. Put a little bit of money down. I've got a certain amount of time that I paid into
your audio is like really...
I have to hang up and call you back because you're having the weird Skype audio issue now as well.
Wow.
So I hit the buzzer on Sarah.
Wah, wah, wah. I'll give you a call right back, Sarah.
Hold that thought. We'll get right back to you. You were about to jump in as well, though.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it sounds complicated on its face because it's a new style of plan, I think. But the thing is, I think you'll be able to go into a T-Mobile store and say, how much do I have to pay per month for this phone? And it's not going to sound that much more than when you're buying a phone or getting a phone on Verizon or any of the other carriers because their plans and the way their contracts are working or subsidies, that's really what's changing. It's not necessarily your bill. Your bill is going to be a little bit different in form, but you're still going to be paying roughly $50 to like $90 a month for a phone. Instead of having an early termination fee, you got to pay off the value of the phone. It's similar things. I think just right now, since it's one of the first ones, people are like, well, this sounds confusing. But over time, I think people are going to get it.
Yeah, but yeah, I think Will's got a point here, which is that it's much easier to explain to somebody like, you have to keep our service for 2 years and the phone's free. And this is how much you pay a month. And what T-Mobile's trying to say is, well, it's very simple. You bring the phone and you pay $50 a month unless you can't afford to bring the phone. Then we'll let you pay it off. And that's where it starts to get complicated. And then it becomes, well, what happens if I cancel? What happens if I cancel is the part that sounded really complicated in here. And frankly, what happens if I cancel is also really complicated on a 2-year contract because of early termination fees and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Arnaz is quite right. In the long run, it kind of amounts to the same thing. Like, you're just trying to cut the cake in a different way. Like, you're still paying basically the same amount for the phone. You're still paying basically the same amount for the service. You're just sort of paying it off in different proportions in different ways. So it seems like you end up paying the same amount of money. You just get more confused doing it.
Well, and T-Mobile argues the opposite. They say they're going to save you $1,000 over AT&T because the plan is so much cheaper than what AT&T charges you. And I haven't looked closely at the numbers to see if they're fudging anything, but I know that those AT&T plans can be $100 or more per month. And if you're doing a $50 plan with a $20 extra payment for your phone, that's $70. So you're cheaper already there. And definitely if you buy the phone up front, you're definitely saving money over the course of those 2 years. So they may have an argument there.
They're also hedging really... the psychology in the North American market is really different. People are used to getting free phones and used to getting very cheap phones. And every attempt to charge full price for a phone has led to disaster so far. So they're trying to move to a more open model. But at the same time, if someone walks into a store and says, how much is that phone? They need to hedge enough to be able to give them an answer that doesn't send them screaming to the next AT&T store.
Yeah, and that's why they're trying to hedge their bets with this payoff plan. And it's only $99 for the iPhone, which sounds great. So we'll see. We'll see if it sinks in. T-Mobile definitely needs something to give them a shot in the arm. Sarah's rebooting, so we will get back to her. But let's move on to BlackBerry announcing a new phone for the holidays, IS.
Yeah, that's. I don't know if that's the smartest idea. I saw the headline on TechCrunch. It said, you're doing it wrong, BlackBerry. And, of course, I had to click that link bait. And it talks about a discussion that Torsten Hines had with CNET, talking how he's very excited about another flagship smartphone that may hit around the holidays of this year. And he says that it takes BlackBerry 10 to another level in terms of the user experience. That's a quote from the CEO of BlackBerry. He says in the near future, if you want to get that Q10, that's the one with the QWERTY keyboard, expect to get that 2 to 3 months after the Z10 launches. The Z10's been around since January 31st in the UK, February 5th in Canada, and it's coming out tomorrow in the United States on AT&T on the 28th for Verizon. Goldman and Citigroup also looked at the Z10's launch. They're a little bit nervous because they're seeing AT&T stores have really limited signage. There's also a lack of marketing at Best Buy and Radio Shack. Renee, I see you got a BlackBerry Z10 there. You have the white one. Could BlackBerry be hit with an Osborne effect by saying, hey, we're going to have an awesome phone. It's not the one we're selling right tomorrow, but in a couple months.
Yes and no. I mean, this is a whole new platform for them, and they've built it to scale. I think the BlackBerry 10 experience will be the same on this phone that it is on future phones. They've done a very good job. They're using a Cascade API. So the Q10 has this little square display, and people I've spoken to who are making Cascade apps have been able to handle that fairly elegantly. So theoretically, if it's a bigger device, a smaller device, a different device, the software will be the same on this one. And in Canada, it's strange because it's everywhere. Every carrier store you walk into is just blanketed with BlackBerry marketing. So I wonder if they're going to be able to be as aggressive in the U.S. given the relative popularity of Android here.
Tom, what do you think? What is worse, Torsten Hines saying that a new flagship phone is coming or the fact that Best Buy, AT&T, and Radio Shack might not be supporting this phone adequately?
I think probably the latter is worse. Most people out there aren't going to hear that Torsten Hines says a new phone is coming. And BlackBerry's mind and market share and buzzworthiness are probably not big enough. I'm not saying it was a smart thing to do to say, yeah, we'll have another phone soon, because it's not. But I think the lack of carrier support, the lack of retail support is much more important to getting this phone into people's hands, getting people aware of the phone. If anything, at least getting people to talk about how stupid saying you have another phone coming out will get people talking about the Z10, and maybe that'll actually help the sales. I don't know. Or should I say Z10, since we have a Canadian and a Brit on the show. I apologize.
Will, you're a businessman. Are you excited about the BlackBerry? Or are you less excited now that the new flagship is coming? Because this is almost outdated. Almost. This is the Z10, by the way, if you can't see that, because it looks like every other phone, because it's black.
I'm about as excited as the most excited person in the world. Can you tell how staggeringly excited I am right now?
You can hear it. You can feel it in his voice.
I thought the opinion overseas would be different. I heard they still have a foothold.
Now, you know what? The BlackBerry over here has gone absolutely nuts. So they are going an awful lot of in-store promotion, almost sort of blanket coverage of outdoor advertising. So they're all over the London Underground and all over the bus stops and all over the TV. There is like a non-stop cavalcade of promotion for the Z10 and the Q10. I still don't think that's actually translating into anybody using these things. When I go, where I commute every day, I haven't seen a single person with one of the new BlackBerry devices. I still see plenty of people bumbling around with Bolds, but as far as I know, it doesn't seem to be making a big splash. I mean, do I think that Torsten Hines saying there's going to be a flagship phone for Christmas is going to make any difference? I don't think it's going to make a jot of difference, is it?
It's really interesting. We have a website called crackberry.com, and they bill themselves as the number one BlackBerry fanboys in the world. And they set up a Big Brother house in Toronto for that launch, and now they have a Big Brother house in New York for that launch. And they are getting tons of people who used the old BlackBerries, maybe went to Android, maybe went to iPhone, and are coming back. And the thing I like about it is that it is different. It is not an iPhone. It is not an Android phone. It's got a gesture-based operating system, which is harder to discover, but once you use it, it's really fast, really powerful, has a lot of nice features. They're getting apps. They'll be able to run Android apps as well. So I think it's hard to have – people want to buy iPhones and carriers want to sell Android phones, so it's really hard to have any room in between. But I think BlackBerry right now is one of the most interesting options in between.
I think Tom might be right, though. Any press is good press for BlackBerry. Yeah. Their name is up there. You're seeing it, and you're wondering, okay, they have a phone. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. All right, we're still trying to get Sarah back, so let's talk a little bit about those Apple quarterly estimates that are coming up this Friday. We heard about it in the news fuse. They expect them to be down for the first time in a decade. In fact, Thomson Financial's consensus is they expect about $10.18 earnings per share, down from $12.30, which is what they reported a year ago. Also expected to announce record revenue, as Iaz mentioned, $41 to $43 billion, but that would still be the slowest quarterly revenue growth in the company's recent past. So immediately, you may want to jump to conclusions of gloom and doom. But thankfully, there's some good folks out there explaining what's going on here. Apple's ability to apply the fixed costs of the iPhone 4 series production over a much larger number of units sold helped last year. With the iPhone 4S, essentially what you're doing was taking fixed production costs from the iPhone 4 and tweaking it a little. The iPhone 5 has a lot larger cost. So the what's called the gross margins, that's a measure of the efficiency of your revenue, essentially, is lower. It's just cost them more to make stuff. So this fall quarter, this last quarter in December, the gross margins looked identical to the fall of 2011, which is when the iPhone 4 came out. So you got a new version of the iPhone, not just a spin on the old iPhone. In fact, there's a post from Robert Lightow, founder of the Braeburn Group, arguing that the increase in costs with the shifting release cycle, so we got an iPad in the fall, we don't have an iPad in the spring, and people were anticipating and holding off spending on the iPhone until the fall, so they spent a lot more in the fall. This caused a blip that he doesn't think will be repeated soon, but he does say they have to keep that revenue growing. And the way to do it is to add NTT Docomo and China Mobile. And if they do that, they'll be fine. Renee, you follow them closely. You're going to be on MacBreak Weekly, probably talking about this a little bit later on. What's your take on this?
Yeah, it's hard to ever say the market is wrong because, you know, it's the market. It's dictating the conditions. But the market is misaligned with Apple's business. Apple doesn't really focus on the sort of things that Wall Street really wishes that they would focus on. So now they made a lot of very aggressive product moves. They updated almost everything last fall, but the margins on those products are lower, and that looks bad on the value sheet, even if it adds to the long-term sustainability of the company. And adding China Mobile absolutely would help. Adding a less expensive iPhone, because the problem now is iPhone 4S is so good. The iPhone 5 is probably going to go to $100 this year when a 5S comes out, and people start buying the cheaper ones, and the average sales price of the iPhone comes down. So if you get to a larger screen, give people two options, you get to cheaper iPhones, all of those things, they don't stop the law of large numbers for Apple, but they mitigate it so that, you know, Apple has more potential to grow before they slow down again.
The other thing is last year their gross margin was like 47%. Yeah. So that's a hard number to even come close to. The fact that Apple introduced new products like the iPad Mini, things that had to get a new design, new chains of supply. The thing is right now, I mean, Apple is going through so much problems with Samsung legally. They have caused a lot of shifts in who they are buying things from. So that could cut down on their margin right there. As they become customers longer term with certain other companies, perhaps their gross margins will increase. But I think it's just a shift. Thing is, Apple's doing different things. They've got newer products. They've got to handle this. But their margins are still going to be ridiculously high because Apple products have always been sold at a premium. That's just they don't do that bargain basement laptop or iPad or anything like that.
Absolutely.
Well, and we've been talking for a long time about how Apple needs a new product line. It's about time. You know, the iPhone is what launched them into the stratosphere, and then the iPad kind of kept them going, and we're waiting for the next shoe, whether it's a television or a freaking camera or some kind of watch. It seems like whether you're talking to financial analysts on Wall Street or just fans of Apple, everybody wants the same thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, Apple has made this immense growth curve off the back of the iPhone and then the iPad and then the iPad mini and all the various generations of the iPhones. And everybody sort of says, well, you know, clearly we need a new product line. I actually don't think that's true, because the thing that's driving, you know, Apple is just about to put in a record revenue quarter. So what that tells you is that people are buying more Apple stuff than ever. Right. So the problem is not people not buying enough Apple stuff. The problem is that for whatever reason, for the market conditions right now, they can't make the stuff cheaply enough right now. They're having to discount it. The cost of supply are going up. So this gross margin, the fact that the gross margin has gone from 47% to 38%, like that accounts for the entire fact that they're going to have this this profit dip. So what Apple needs is not really to make a new product, because they're clearly selling plenty enough of what they've got. They need to focus on driving the cost down and refining the manufacturing processes of the stuff they're delivering. I mean, remember that, you know, they're making these iMacs now that are super thin. They're going to have to, they've changed to the iPhone 5, which is, again, a different manufacturing process from the iPhone 4. So my suspicion is that in the next quarter, their gross margin, or certainly by the Christmas quarter, their gross margin will be back up again, as they start to get those manufacturing costs under control. But I don't think new products is the problem, actually.
Yeah, but not a bad idea, just not the solution is what you're saying. That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, no one's going to complain about having new Apple products, right? Everybody wants the watch or the, you know, the TV or
the Hi-Fi 2. Still waiting for the Hi-Fi 2.
It's not actually going to solve the problem that Wall Street has got right now. Because if you bring in a new product line, chances are it's going to be quite expensive to make it. Because when you're releasing a new product line, it's always expensive to start making it. You've got to tool it all up. And, you know, so that's actually going to make the problem worse, actually, I think.
All right, let's take a quick break. And Sarah's back. We got a couple stories to bring her in on with this episode of Tech News Today, brought to you by Gazelle. If you want one of these new products, maybe you're going to want to try out one of these T-Mobile things. Maybe you want that iPhone. You want to sell your old phone and get a little cash, defray the expense. Even at $99, bringing in a little cash can help you out. Before you get the new one, the new whatever, Samsung Galaxy S4, HTC One, iPhone 5, make sure you sell your used iPhone to Gazelle for cash. Don't give away or bury last year's smartphone in a drawer. Find out what it's worth at gazelle.com today. And if you're saying, now, wait a minute, I can't get rid of my phone until I get my new one, that's where Gazelle makes it easy. They let you lock in that price for 30 days. So there's no reason to delay. Go to gazelle.com right now. Get an offer for your Samsung, your HTC, your Motorola, your LG, your other Android smartphone, and lock in that quote for 30 days. Then you can go shopping. Decide if you want to buy a new iPhone, because you know how much you're going to get paid by Gazelle because they locked it in. As soon as you get that new phone, send the old one off. You get paid fast in a couple of days. Find out what your Android smartphone is worth. Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy device today at gazelle.com. And we thank them for their continuing support of Tech News Today. All right, Sarah, we got you back. And Evernote's cozying up to the Germans. What's going on there?
Yes, and I certainly hope I sound better than I did the last time I tried to talk
on
the show. Good. Yeah. So yesterday, this was actually, you know, something that I wanted to mention on the show. We didn't really have time. Phil Libin, who's the CEO of Evernote, had said, you know, what has helped Evernote downloads is Google Keep. He says ever since Keep launched, downloads of Evernote and usage are up at least enough for him to notice. He didn't provide any specific numbers, but he said, it's kind of pushing people towards Evernote and the way that Evernote works in general. Also yesterday, Evernote 5 hit the Google Play Store. It had some features for premium members, but notably a revamped camera interface. So for Android users, certainly a lot better of a product. But now Evernote has, I mean, they're just on the offensive. They have a new partnership with Germany's Deutsche Telekom, which is huge, huge market, 60 million mobile and broadband and fixed line customers who all will get Evernote Premium until September 25th, 2014 for free. So that's not like a month or two of free premium service. That's 18 months worth. It's pretty nice. Now, normally it's $52 per year to access offline notebooks and be able to send, supersized files, uploads, added security, et cetera, for the premium service. So this is it's a huge savings for anybody who wants to take advantage of it. Now, if you're a new customer, you can request the premium update online or via the latest version of that Android app that I mentioned. If you already have the premium service, you can just extend it for a year. So this is something that everybody can benefit from, whether they've never tried it before or you know they'd like to. And this is actually just this is just Deutsche Telekom. However, other Evernote partners who have been able to take advantage of this are far and wide. We've got NTT Docomo in Japan, Orange in France, KT in Korea, Taiwan Mobile. Evernote Business also came to several European countries this year. I don't know. You know, Renee, I'll ask you. I'm not sure how much you use Evernote, but it seems like a really great deal to get people hooked in. If they've got 18 months of premium service that, you know, it costs a bit of money otherwise.
Yeah, I play around with Evernote. I always have the good intentions of using it, and then I just get busy and forget to use it. But I think in general, when you look at Dropbox buying Mailbox, and you look at Evernote moving, and it's such a competitive industry now, and the basic part of it is commoditized completely. The cloud storage from Amazon to Google to everybody is doing that, and now they're layering these services on, making almost cloud OSs for us to play with, and it's getting really competitive, and I think that's great because the pricing initially was super expensive, and now it's really affordable even for large data sets and large amounts of complicated data to get on there.
Well, I had heard one of the last stats I had read was that about 70% of Evernote users are based in the U.S. Being based in the U.K. and, you know, Europe in general, do you feel like this is going to help Evernote expand into the European market? It really seems that that's what they're looking to do.
Yeah, so I think Deutsche Telekom is obviously one of the absolute monsters over here in terms of the number of customers that they've got. So I think it'll make a big difference. And I think the fact that, you know, am I right in saying this is only coming via Android? So the free service you only get via the Android app?
Well, this is a partnership with Deutsche Telekom. So no, you can, because the Android app has recently been updated, it's just there's an easy way to take advantage of the free trial, okay. But you can do it via the web
as well. Well, I think that makes a big difference because, you know, we also know that Android is more popular in the States right now than it is in Europe. I think partly because of the particular subsidies that the iPhone gets over here. So I think it'll make a big difference. You know, I can only speak for myself and I can say that I use Evernote nonstop. Like it's a really crucial bit of my life and everybody in my office does as well. But I guess, I don't know, maybe the rest of Europe isn't picking up, but this certainly seems like if you're looking to get your app in the hands of a lot of people, partnering with Deutsche Telekom is a pretty darn good way to do it.
Yeah, it seems like a smart move for Deutsche Telekom with the rabidness of Evernote fans. I'm not one of those people, but I know so many people like you, Will, like Rafe Needleman, who now works at Evernote, who are just so enthusiastic that this is the kind of thing that I think would sway someone to switch over or at least keep them from switching if they're already on Deutsche Telekom.
Well, you know, Ayaz has said on the show a bunch of times that once you get into the habit of using Evernote to its full potential, or at least part of its full potential, you really realize how indispensable it can be. So, you know, this is a common model, right? Let people get used to these extra features. They're going to cost them $50 a year otherwise. Give them 18 months to make it so that they cannot perform their day without it. And then you have paying customers that are pretty happy because you gave them a really nice long freebie.
All right, let's, Ayaz, you got a story here. Microsoft creating the perfect Spotify playlist.
Yeah. Okay, so I know, and I mean, sometimes I shy away from the doom and gloom stories, and today I was looking at this thing called Mixshape. It's a new music tool, and it's available at mixshape.ie. It's a partnership of Microsoft, Spotify, and the Echo Nest. And here's what you do. You tell Mixshape what kind of mood you want for your playlist. There's work, exercise, party, all kinds of things there. You put in a link from one of your Spotify playlists, and Mixshape, what it does is analyzes your playlist. It'll reorder and substitute tracks. So if you have that one playlist that you shouldn't have this really schmaltzy song while you're trying to do a workout, it'll take it out and replace it. It shows you this weird animated visual. And what you get to do is you get to change that shape. If you want to edit it, you can move the line up and down, and it'll replace the songs for you with other Spotify tracks. Then you can export that with either Twitter or Facebook or Pinterest or even email it to yourself, and so you can access it via Spotify. And music is savable. You can always save this to Spotify. Renee, is this something you'd use? Would you use a service that helps you curate your playlists?
Yeah, well, I absolutely would. I think that one of the big problems I have now is I just throw things in these giant buckets, and whether it's playlist buckets or saved for later buckets, and then I go in and look at them and they're almost intimidating, and you start playing them and you just listen to things that you don't end up wanting to listen to, and collection becomes like hoarding, and anything that can surface intelligently stuff that I am more likely to enjoy or let me quickly change it would be fantastic at this point.
Sarah, you're big into streaming audio. Do you think this would get you to move away from something like RDO and go, hey, wait a minute, my Spotify playlist can get better by using a service like this?
Yeah. In fact, music is very mood-based for me, you know? The whole, like, hey, are you in the mood to exercise? We're going to give you stuff that's similar to the music that you already like that's based on a certain mood. I love that. I mean, I think if the algorithm can work well, it's probably something, I don't want to say, yeah, I'll move away from RDO because I just like it so much, but it's the sort of thing that if this is successful, then everybody who provides streaming services is going to have to jump on board and offer something similar because it's really cool.
Well, what do you make of Mixshape? Is this something strange that Microsoft's a part of? I mean, it seems unusual for them to be a part of this, but it seems like a really interesting partnership when it comes to Spotify. I thought he was back.
I want to get excited about Spotify. Have you got me?
Yes, we have you.
Yes, I'm definitely still here. I definitely still exist. You know, I'm not big on visualizing music, right? So your new playlist is shown to you as an animated visual. Like, I'm kind of not bothered about that. When I play music, I want the music that I want. I don't want something else to choose it for me. I don't want it to analyze something and to reorder or change things. Like, I want it the way that I want it. I also think Spotify right now is rapidly becoming the poor man's RDO. I know, Sarah, you're a big RDO fan. And I just think that Spotify should spend less time fiddling around with stupid partnerships for visualizing playlists and more time developing an actual playlist interface that works properly.
Tom, you used to work on radio. You have really curated playlists. Is this something you'd be interested in? Or is this something like, because you set up what you want right there? No. Would you like to expand on that? No, please.
I'm not interested in this in the least. That doesn't mean it's a bad thing necessarily. This is probably great for a lot of people. But I've probably gone on too often on the show about my big, massive playlist that I carefully keep. I don't want some service coming in, ripping things out, adding things willy-nilly. It's just not how I do my music.
Well, I mean, it's exported as another playlist. It doesn't ruin your first playlist. I'm like Renee when it comes to music discovery. I will find albums that I like, and I might not like every track right away. I'll throw this in a giant playlist. I have a list that's far too long, and this service tops out at 300 tracks, by the way. So if you have like a 5,000-song one, it's not going to work that well. But it's this idea of trying to get this music to match the mood I'm in. Because when I'm working out or cleaning up, I need some high-energy music. And I don't want to be pulled down by something that I put in by accident because it was an album track. It was a B-side of something that was just so mellow. It's not going to work for me. I think this is a really interesting hook that you can have the visual look, too, because maybe this is just the way my brain works, but this idea of, okay, I want there to be a lot of energy in the middle of my workout. So let's make it high energy there. Let's slow it down. This is the way my brain works, I guess. So if you've ever wondered what that looks like, it looks like this mix shape. I'm going to move some lines around and maybe it'll make
this
sense.
This is your brain on music. Got it.
Well, I mean, there's so many. I mean, we all keep reading these studies that say the more music that we can all discover, the more we end up buying music, right? And the more that the artists end up, not having to deal with as much piracy, right? So it's like, figuring out how we can all discover music in new and unusual ways, I think for the most part is a good thing. Yeah, not everybody's really interested in something that's some sort of a visual representation of a mood, but it's like, it's just one more way to analyze the kinds of songs we end up liking at different points of the day for various reasons. You know, it's beats per minute or some sort of a visual graph of, you know, the stuff that makes me happy when I clean my house. It's kind of fascinating.
All right, let's finish up with the stock photo market getting disrupted by Bruce Livingstone, the founder of iStock Photo, which he sold to Getty Images a while back. What's he up to now, Sarah?
Well, he's up to something called Stocksy.com, and it's kind of wildly different than iStock Photo, actually. As you mentioned, Getty Images scooped it up in 2006 for $50 million. Livingstone stayed with the company for another 3 years. He was fired in 2009. And he says this is a completely different model based on people who take good pictures, who deserve a lot more money than the crappy royalties that they're getting on competing services. He says they're not taking any venture capital. They don't have an exit strategy. Photographers get 50% of the revenue when one of their pictures sells. Plus, they will split the profits left over at the end of each year. So it's like, wow, that sounds like a really, really great deal. He says that photographers' royalties were declining. He obviously knows a lot of the top tier photographers having been in the business as long as he had. Too much competition. There are a lot of photographers that just simply don't take as good of pictures. So the whole marketplace was getting sort of flooded with bad quality. And the people who had dedicated their lives to this didn't feel like they could make a living anymore. So Stocksy is an extremely small group, a curated group of photographers. They have 220 photographers on board today that are currently uploading about 1,000 images per day. Images are priced very reasonably, anywhere between $10 and $100. They say they have plans to grow to about 500 photographers, but not a huge scale. They also say they're planning vector-based art for people who are extremely talented, but not necessarily in the photography realm, but aren't looking to expand into video, at least at this point. And, you know, this is really Livingstone saying the whole marketplace is a mess. You know, Getty Images bought iStock Photo. Obviously, he benefited quite a bit. It was a nice big sale. But since then, they've got photographers who had been very, very active and vocal on iStock Photo. You know, at one point, Getty had licensed images to Google for use in stuff like Google Docs and Google Slides. Photographers were pretty upset about it. They felt like they were being taken advantage of. A photographer named Sean Locke was particularly vocal about it, got booted off of iStock Photo, and other photographers were really upset about it. Livingstone also says that certain competitors, Shutterstock he uses as an example, that are planning premium photo collections, he says, you know what they're really doing? They're just saying that stuff is premium. They're moving kind of regular collections into premium collections and jacking up the price, and we don't want to do that. It's all about photographers and quality. I think this is just like really fascinating. Not only does Bruce Livingstone know what's going on in this world of stock photography, but it is a really aggressive way to get photographers a lot more money than they could enjoy with any other service. What do you guys think about this? Do you think that the market's too saturated? Do you think he has a chance, Ayaz?
You know, I was thinking about the way this whole setup would work. The idea of trying to hit the premium market up front, that's probably the smartest way to go. Because if you're trying to be another low cost, or we have Creative Commons things, or we have other really cheap ones, cheap images that you can get, or cheap videos, you're up against everything that exists out there. But trying to cater this service to higher end things, to get more money for the artist at the same time, it might be useful to bigger companies that are like, you know what, we don't want to have that same stock image of that person on a little headset, because we're waiting for your call. They might want to go out and get images from a company like this because they want to differentiate themselves. Because otherwise, you're like, wait, I have seen that stock image on Microsoft, and I've seen it on Apple, and I've seen it there and there and there and there. You want to have something, have a hook or small thing to make sure that people aren't thinking you're just some other company. I think that targeting this premium market is probably intelligent.
It's kind of a cross between Pond5 and Shutterstock, both Twit advertisers, we should make a point of saying, where the royalty rate that they're giving from this new venture of Livingstone's is the same as Pond5's, but then they cut you in as a co-op. They run it as a co-op, so you get a little more at the end of the year. But they're also targeting premium and going after people like Shutterstock and saying, you know what, we're going to have that high level, that curation. We're going to try to be a couple of things to a couple of different kinds of people. And they got some great names on board. Trey Ratcliffe is apparently attached to this. So it'll be really interesting to keep an eye on this. Right now, they don't have a lot of images in there, but it takes time to build up those libraries.
Yeah, I was doing some keyword searches. You know, I searched for desert and woman, and you know, the quality of the pictures is very high. I guess my only reservation with an idea like this, because it sounds like it's great for photographers, is what about people, you know, like myself? I don't have the fanciest camera rig, but I think I take a decent photo every once in a while. What does it take to get included on something like Stocksy? And I don't necessarily have the answer. I just
Not open. It's not open to anybody who wants to sign up.
Well, it's not. It's open to anybody who would like to sign up, but you have to be ushered in. They have the right to say, no, you're not quite at the caliber of the photographers curated, that we want right. representing us.
So you apply. That's interesting.
Right.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break and thank our third sponsor for today's show. Take it away, Leo.
Hi, Tom, Sarah. Hello, everybody. I want to interrupt briefly to talk a little bit about Hulu Plus. Watch as many TV shows as you want, anytime, on almost any device with Hulu Plus, and we've got a special offer for you that doubles the trial of Hulu Plus. Have you tried it lately? Man, this is the best way to watch a lot of network programming that you cannot see any other way, like recent episodes of Grimm or Grey's Anatomy. I watch The Daily Show every morning on Hulu Plus. I don't want to stay up late. Colbert Report, Law & Order, The Office, even older classics like Firefly and the complete Star Trek oeuvre. The original series and every series after that. Hulu Plus is amazing. For $7.99 a month, you get classic TV shows, full seasons of current shows, and you can watch it almost anywhere on your connected TV. I've got it on my Panasonic and on my Samsung and on my Vizio. On your Blu-ray player, Xbox 360 and PS3 have Hulu Plus. The Apple TV's got a beautiful, have you seen the new Hulu Plus interface on the Apple TV? Update your Apple TV if you haven't. It's gorgeous. On the Roku, on my Roku 3, I watch Hulu Plus most of the time. Also on mobile phones, tablets, and of course, as I am doing right now, on my desktop computer. I never stay up for Saturday Night Live. I don't have to. I got Hulu Plus. I love Hulu Plus. You will too. Try it free for 2 weeks. Double the trial offer when you visit HuluPlus.com/twit. HuluPlus.com/twit. And we do thank them so much for their support of Tech News Today, TNT, and we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Hulu Plus.
Let's take a look at the calendar. What's happening soon, Sarah?
Well, this is kind of exciting if you like the whole Tesla movement. Tesla's CEO, Elon Musk, has tweeted that he's got a big announcement on Thursday, and he wrote, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is in a very major way. He said the major way because it was Twitter speak, but I'm excited. All right. Well, we'll find out pretty soon. Twitter's also holding a mobile-focused platform event on April 2nd. They want to discuss exciting new features. And get this, no press is allowed. That's interesting. And the Chromebook Pixel will, with LTE, for those of you who are excited, is shipping by April 8th. So that's right around the corner, actually.
I'm going to get mine finally.
Yay.
They've had my money for so long. Please give me my Chromebook. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail with some speculation on what Apple might do with buying that Wi-Fi slam technology.
Hey guys, Darcy, calling from Massachusetts. I just heard that story about Apple buying a small Wi-Fi company. You guys were saying that they might be interested in doing some indoor mapping. One other thing that came to mind was possibly that maybe they might do something kind of like Square, where they use location, your location information to maybe submit a payment to a retailer. Apple, you know, usually doesn't put, you know, that new technology in their phones, especially if a lot of other people aren't using it yet. Like a lot of retailers don't have NFC. So this might be another way to get them into the whole payment game. Instead of using NFC, they just might use your location and just use Wi-Fi, especially if maybe the stores have a particular Wi-Fi access point in the store just for payments. So just about. Thanks.
Do you think Apple would use their Wi-Fi technology or the indoor mapping, Renee, for payments?
This is Alex.
Oh.
So
there
is
Alex.
A pen.
Not now, Alex. I'm talking to Renee.
Alex, go away.
What do you think, Renee?
SLAM is simultaneous location and mapping, for anyone who's not familiar with it. And the problem indoors is that signals are really weird and different materials exist, and it's hard to do. And this company basically would let you take your iPhone, show it your location, and then walk around a building, and it would build a map for you. To me, you know, Apple bought C3 Technologies, which did something outdoors by using airplanes to fly around and build 3D buildings, and then they made this nice visualization layer. And it could be possible that this is more of an internal Apple technology that they're going to use to kind of catch up with Google's indoor mapping, maybe even to map their own giant mothership, you know, headquarters when they finally build it so their workers can find their way around. But I think that their commerce is, it wouldn't benefit from this directly. That's more of a generalized location service, I think.
We got an email from Rob in Orlando. He says, hey, TNT crew, longtime fan, follow Tom over from BOL. Anyways, I was thinking about this whole deal with trying to pass laws against using Google Glass while driving. While I understand the concern about distracted driving with modern cars, i.e. BMWs, we're seeing the slow creep of heads-up displays displayed onto the front windshield. Why not have a car mode for Google Glass where it ties into only the car via Bluetooth and displays information like speed, how much gas you have left, and if you're using GPS, when your next turn is? I'm sure the developers for Google Glass apps can build it so it's subtle and no more distracting than a dash and a GPS and a stereo and whatever else you got running. Just a thought.
Will, are you worried about driving while you have your Google Glass on?
No, I'm redonkulously excited. I think it could be amazing. I mean, I just love the idea that you could, you know, as this guy, I mean, as Rob from Orlando quite rightly says, the idea of having a car mode for Google Glasses is staggering. Like, you could have a heads-up display that shows you, like, the traffic or that displays your turn by turn, like, as you're going. Like, it's just absolutely such a stonking good idea. I know that there is the whole, you know, are your eyes really on the road? Are you really paying attention type thing? But honestly, I think that having, you know, your GPS or your turn-by-turn projected in front of you is probably going to be less distracting than looking at some little thing down in the corner of your vision, you know, by the radio or whatever. So I actually think it's a fantastic idea, and if I really, really want this.
It's the driving mode, right? You don't want text messages popping in front of your face while you're trying to drive. But the stuff you're talking about makes sense. Renee, do you agree?
Yeah, I'm all for better ways of using. I think mobile is going automotive. You know, so have some cars have LTE built in. They're really getting the networking going. And I think that if we have devices that don't distract us but add information to us, it makes us better. It's sort of like having a virtual co-pilot. And if they could nail that, I'm not sure I'm completely anti text message. I don't want it throwing up in my face. But if it would read it to me, if there were levels of urgency, just some way to add information and not add distraction.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of Tech News today. Thanks, everybody, for hanging in there and watching or listening. Big thanks to our guest, Renee Ritchie. You'll be on MacBreak Weekly shortly, but of course, you can always be found at imore.com. Anything else you want to tell folks about?
No, I mean, just come on by and enjoy. We're doing lots of iPhone stuff every day, and if that's your phone of choice, we've got something for you.
Excellent. And Will Harris, always a pleasure. Great to have you. Channelflip.com. But I notice you have something else in your lower third involving Ricky Gervais. There's a music video. What's that about?
Yes, very excited. So we have just launched a new YouTube channel, and it's youtube.com/RickyGervais. And you guys will know Ricky Gervais from The Office and all the things that Ricky Gervais does, like films and the comedy and those sorts of things. And so we've got a new YouTube channel, and it's all his crazy creations. The first thing that we've done is bring back the character of David Brent, which is the character that made Ricky famous in The Office in the UK in the first place. And we've done a new music video and a new 10-minute piece with David Brent. And actually, it's all in aid of Comic Relief, which is a really big aid charity over here. So go and check out youtube.com/RickyGervais and subscribe and get all the latest crazy funniness.
What a fun thing to be involved in. That's awesome.
He's a fun guy.
Yeah. Is he as funny in person?
No, he's totally boring. He's the most boring and miserable person that I've ever met. No. Honestly, great, funny, exciting clips. You can follow him on Twitter at Ricky Gervais, and then follow me on Twitter at Will Harris.
Excellent. Thank you all for watching. You can also go to our subreddit. So many things for you to do, but do them all. They're all worth it. TechNewsToday.reddit.com, where you can submit stories and vote on the stories that have been submitted by other listeners of the show. You can also find everything we talk about in our show notes linked to, as well as our wiki linked to, and our episodes linked to from the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us TNT@twit.tv or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail 260-TNT-SHOW. We will see you tomorrow. Until then.